What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I got a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, man, I have a very gifted and talented music producer who's produced the biggest names in industry, from R. Kelly to Joe and to the king of pop himself, Mr. Michael Jackson. Please welcome music producer Roy Hamilton III.
What's going on, Spud? How you doing?
Oh, Roy, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for coming in, chopping it up with
Thanks
me,
man. Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's truly an honor, brother. Thank you. You know, Roy, from one music producer to another, man, I definitely want to take my hat off to you as a producer, man. The new track that you got out with R. Kelly featuring Keri Hilson, Number One, it's a smash hit, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, but I'm just a messenger, baby. You know, I can't take credit.
I heard that, man. You know, how did that project start, man? How did you guys collaborate on that together?
I've had a relationship with R. Kelly for about 10 years now. He kind of gave me my start by signing me as a ghostwriter, ghost producer in 1997. And, you know, I worked under him for about three and a half years. Then I went on to start, producing records and hits of my own. And then, you know, the relationship came back around full circle when he was looking for a first single for his new record, for the Untitled record. And Wayne Williams, who's my big brother and one of my mentors, he's DJ Wayne Williams, he's the vice president at Jive. He heard a track that my younger brother actually worked on. And it was something that I helped my brother finish up. So the track was, for me, was a collaboration with my younger brother. So long story short, Kel's heard the record. He asked me for the files and helped have me to come out to Chicago and finish up the track and get it to where he thought that he can take it, you know, and finish writing it. And then we brought in Keri Hilson as a feature, and there you have it. Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm just trying to, you know, just do my thing and serve my purpose here, you know?
Yeah. Now, you know, I also heard, man, that you were also working with Mr. Teddy Riley, man. And if you don't know, man, I am a huge, huge Teddy Riley fan. I mean, to me, man, he, you know, for Teddy, man, it was, for me, you know, coming into the game, I started playing and composing music at 14, and, you know, it's like you try to get the attention of your peers, your younger peers, so they can really appreciate what you do. And, you know, before Teddy came in, I was like, the only person I could really associate myself with was Quincy Jones, who was just the father of all producers. But a lot of the younger guys didn't really know Quincy like we do. You know, so when Teddy came into the picture, man, it has changed my whole game and perception of production, man. Give me some details and the experience, what it was like working with Teddy.
What I found most interesting about working with Teddy Riley was that he had a real keen sense of hearing hooks and hit melodies, but he was such a great sonic person, like being able to, you know, which kick drums, which snare drums to use, and just how to play sounds and put sounds in their place. And I picked up a lot of that directly from working with Teddy, because for a long time he was known as the best mixer on top of the best producer in the game.
Yes.
I learned so much from working with Teddy Riley. It's like, you know, like a lot of the legends that, you know, that everybody is inspired by now, like I was able to work directly with these people. So I picked up not all of their tricks. I can't say that. I'm sure they all still got tricks at this league, but I got a chance to learn a lot of what they know and soak it up and, form it into my own formula.
Definitely.
Making records.
Well, it sounds, man, like I say, man, your tracks that I've heard and I know that you've done, man, you're definitely doing the drive at that, man. You know, you've been recording a long time, bro, and I want to kind of back up a little bit for recording. You and I both come from both sides of the game, from the analog world to the DAW world. Give me some.
Man.
that's a whole nother show, but I'm gonna try to sum it up. Try to sum up into like a box best way I can, man, so we can, you know, cover some of the focus details on it. What did you start recording on before the DAW world came into about, and what are you using now? Give me some pros and cons of both, if you can.
Okay, I started on a SSL. G-Series console with the Studer 2-inch tape machine.
Ooh, nice.
That's where I'm from. And 1997, like I said, we were heavily still using tapes, 2-inch tapes. And it's a thing where I saw the first Pro Tools rig come into the studio, and I was like, wow, what is this? And everybody was saying, yo, this is Pro Tools. This is, you know, this is digital recording.
Right.
And I remember, you know, we had them both because, you know, working with R. Kelly, he was always right on the verge of what was next, too, because he had some of the greatest engineers around him, mm-hmm. you know, backing him up, helping him stay fresh and keep his sound innovative. So I watched as Pro Tools came in into the picture, and I watched over the course from 1998 to now, you know, 2008, 2009, to where now it's the new standard. And even now I'm watching Logic creep up behind that and, you know, take up where Pro Tools is leaving off.
Right.
So, you know, do I believe that, you know, the digital thing is kind of downgrading some of the sound? Yeah, because I know what it sounds like to record on analog on tape. And I know how full and round, like I can still hear the difference. But if you didn't come from it, you can't hear the difference. Like a lot of the young track makers and the guys that are producers of tomorrow, they won't really get a chance to experience and understand what that true analog sound is and what it means to where, you know, you bump up your input so hot on analog, you can really beef up them kick drums and those bass lines and really push, what you really can't do, you know, now.
Right. You know, that's where I really saw the difference on the low end, you know, coming from the analog world. Man, I definitely got a beefier signal mix through my analog gear versus my digital gear. I got to use a lot of preamps and a lot of EQing and effects to, you know, get close to it. But my input signal, yeah, it's a lot less. I get a little less headroom on, you know, my DAW system than I would on my analog gear.
Absolutely. And what I found with recording in Logic gives you a nicer round bottom end. I don't know what they're doing. This Logic stuff, man, but something under it, man. It's got something that's giving it a little bit more of a dynamic, full sound.
I got to definitely back you up on that, Roy. I came from, when I first started doing DAW recording, I was running on a Mac, on a Studio Vision Pro recorder, sequencer. After I left Mac, I went to PC, tried out the Cubase for about 5 years, went all the way up to Cubase 5.0, and from there I went to Pro Tools, did Pro Tools for about 5 years, and I've crossed over and been using Logic for about 4 years, man. I haven't looked back since. Logic Pro, honestly, is like, man, I should be a spokesperson for Logic, man, seriously. Logic is that deal. I mean, the closest thing that you can do for really mixing and creating within a box has got to be Logic Pro 8. I mean, that's just my opinion, but the way I have it running, there's so many features and edits that I think really a lot of people haven't really looked into it or tapped into it yet. Logic is the tool to use, in my opinion.
I'm telling you, I got turned on to Logic about 8 months ago. My engineer, Kit Warden, who's also a musician, he uses Logic to record vocals. And when I first got there, it didn't really dawn on me the sound, how much different it was, until I started to compose and record right there. Because I was bringing a lot of two tracks, and I was just using his studio to record vocals. And man, it sounds so round and full. Like The Invisible Man was done, 90% of it was you know, done in Logic through a Neve, you know, a 15-year-old Neve channel.
Wow.
All the vocals and everything is recorded through, and the guitars and everything, and then I mixed it in Pro Tools. So it's got this sound and this dynamic to it, and you know that's where I found it at, and it's almost got an analog vibe to it. Like all
it
the
does.
New stuff I'm doing, yeah, all the new stuff I'm doing, like almost has that, you know, analog warmth and roundness and depth, and I'm happy about that because I've been searching for that for a long time.
Right. I'm telling you, Logic Pro is the closest thing, a DAW system, that you're going to get to that analog sound. It's not completely there, but it's closer than Cubase and Pro Tools, in my opinion.
Wait, yeah, man, forget about it.
Yeah.
Wait, close. I gotta totally back you up on that.
You know, Ro, I want to talk about your signal chain, your typical signal chains for your synths, your drums, and your vocals, because I definitely listened to your mix, man. You definitely got a hot signal, and it's got that analog feel to it. What's the typical signal trains? What pre's are you using? Compression on all of those signal paths you're using?
Believe it or not, what I do is when I produce a track, I just find drums that are already hitting. Like, I'll sit and go through 2-3 hours worth of kicks, snares, hats, and just find sounds that I think are, like, pretty much there, so I don't have to spend a whole lot of time EQing. And whatever's done in post is just a little bit. I like to brighten my claps and kicks a little bit, like a little high end EQ, just a tad. Definitely when we mix, because I got a chance to sit in on a mix session for the final of Invisible Man, and what we used was a lot of the SSL plugin.
Oh, the SSL 4000? Oh, yeah. By Waves? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of those Waves. Just to get those compressors, that kind of stuff in there. And then just, ran everything through a Euphonics board as the final, ran everything right straight through the Euphonics. So just kind of keep it as simple, trying to use the best of the best, man. I just believe in quality over quantity and,
right.
Start with the best possible when you begin. That way you don't have to over-compress or over-EQ or, just do too much.
Sure.
You already started with some great sounds. And actually, while we're talking about that, I'm actually going to be releasing various drum collections on my website soon of these same type of drums. Because I know you probably can sympathize with me on this too. When you first start to produce beats, the hardest thing to find is banging drums that are already, hitting.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I already had that punch.
Right.
And, my ear developed into being able to hear those drums right away. So now, I go through gigabytes and gigabytes of drums and break down kits. And I'll be selling kits on my website, hopefully in the next 3 months, putting out monthly collections so that, young producers and kids can get their hands on solid drum sound early.
Definitely. I mean, you made a good point, man. I think you and I, man, we both come from the school of Teddy, man, listening to his music, the way he processes his drums. We've been stacking claps and snares, man, years ago. We had to do this manually. I mean, a lot of guys, I mentor a lot of producers on the side, man, and I said, the guys, the samples that you guys are getting, these samples aren't just one shot. These samples are probably 3-4 different kicks and snares on top of each other. These are stacked claps and snares you guys can do in your own studio. So let's say if you got a snare, you got a clap, you got another clap, you can assign those to different channels and align them off and give them a little bit offset so you got that lazy clap stacks, that sound. So I was like, man, that's where the editing and that old school way of thinking and producing really helps out, man.
Yeah, it helps me, man, because it's just that sound. You're like, wow, what is he using? How is it? It's like you said, some old school tricks. I just came up. I happened to come up at a time where I was right at the cusp of when it crossed over.
Now we're both keyboard players, man. What are you using? Are you using any soft synths or your hardware synth guy? Because you're from old, man, so I gotta ask you.
I have a Motif. I have a Phantom X6, I think.
Yep.
I haven't used it in a while, but mostly I'm using software synths. My favorite software synth at the moment is the Nexus software synthesizer.
Oh,
my favorite.
Nice.
Yeah, I get a lot of great, European sounds. That's really at the moment, a lot of the European sounds are what's driving radio and driving dance. But I still use a lot of live instrumentation, and I just do overlays of, really good trans gate sounds with good trans gates on them and things to rhythmically, keep the track moving.
Right.
But since I've discovered a few musicians in my area, like I have an awesome cellist that I work with, this guy Zach Hagen. He's awesome, and he plays about 10 instruments, and I've been messing with mandolins and ukuleles and just really experimenting with live and trying to integrate that back into pop music, but still use some of the synthesizers and dance sounds ear candy that people are going to relate with. And then reel them in with that, and then just get them lost in the live musicianship and the melodies and the music, which needs to come back. Because you said Quincy, like that dude's my inspiration. So you got to have the ear candy, plus you need the musicality, you need the melody, and then you need the hot beats, the bumping hard, great drums that people can dance to and they can feel.
Definitely. I want to talk to you, Roy, a little bit about composition. For me as a producer, I think my strength as a producer is when I can get an artist or hip-hop artist in the studio. You'll have a basic track that, they'll be able to flow to. You get pretty much 80% of those vocals and chops down. And what I do is I'll strip the existing track completely. Just tear it off naked, man. There's nothing there. And then I start to really build my music around the artist because I feel I can really tailor them that way, the way my ear works. What are some of the tricks that you do in the studio to really compose your tracks for those artists?
Yep, I do the same thing. When I'm writing a song or working with somebody, I like to get the tracks around, 50% at least have the groove you know, definitely have the groove there. Even if it's not the final drums, definitely have my chord progression in pocket. And then once the vocals are there, you know, I got the vocals, you know, done to where I'm loving the vocals, then I'll go in and produce them out. And now, like you said, custom make it, sort it around the artist and put those moments. You know, I'm really got to have your moments in the song where, you know, you have your drops and your breaks and, you know, you throw a little ear candy in there that complement certain moments in the sound. I think, you know, Dr. Dre is somebody who I noticed would do that a lot in the simplicity of his tracks. He's definitely always kept a few great moments in his music, and he did it really well a lot with Eminem, because Eminem, type of writer he is, so visual and vivid. It, you know, there's a lot of times where you can, especially, you know, when you have those kind of songs that people can see, can put sounds and moments and things like that to really make the song into an experience rather than just being a song, you know?
Agreed. Now, man, I also just found out, Roy, that you served as director of A&R for Capitol Records, man, at a very young age. That's unheard of.
Yes.
That, man, that's unbelievable, man. Seriously, that's...
I didn't even believe it, man. That's like a godsend, because, you know, going into a corporation like that, I was already fairly knowledgeable on how to create music, but then to have the opportunity to go and learn how the business is ran at a top corporate level was, you know, I mean, look, unexplained phenomenon as far as I'm concerned.
Seriously.
Because I came in at such a high level as my first executive position.
Wow.
It's definitely a blessing to be able to do that. And I learned so much about marketing and promotion. And, you know, I was on certain meetings and calls about new media with the, you know, the whole internet thing and how to finally integrate the downloads and MP3, you know, into the new business model and how everybody now is really into it. You know, I was in those discussions 3.5 years ago. And, you know, coming up with concepts and solutions, trying to solve some of those problems that, you know, all of the big companies were having, were trying to figure out how to monetize their music through this new platform that it's not that new. It's been there. It's just, it was the elephant in the room, and everybody wanted to pretend like, oh, it'll go away, or, you know, we're just not going to talk about it.
Right.
When, you know, there was a small group of guys in the room in the new media department that were constantly trying to brainstorm and come up with a way to monetize, you know, all of that music and all of the, you know, catalog that these labels have. And we had it at EMI to sell more music, to stream more music, and to create, you know, more opportunities to do what record companies do, which is sell music, sell product.
Right.
So, man, it definitely was a blessing just to learn it. And it put me light years beyond a lot of my peers, in the sense that I was always able to see where things are going tomorrow.
Right.
For the business, not just for the music. Because, I find a lot of music in the most obscure places. You know, a lot of the things that I think are the next sound. And then,
sure.
You know, we both know that the things that are on the radio are really, we're very old. A lot of people don't know this, but once things make it to Z100,
yeah,
that song is considered a throwback.
Right. Right.
Because there's another tune that's starting to bubble on the internet, or bubble in the club, some club in, you know, Mississippi, or some movement that's happening in some subculture that's the new thing. And whatever's on Z100 is like, oh, it's an old record.
Right.
You know, things start in the underbelly and then come to the top. That process to the top, you know, when you finally hear that song on Z100, that's like a 12-month, 13, 14-month process.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree there.
You know, and I learned a lot of that from, you know, working in a label and hearing things when it's, yo, we, you know, we got our finger on this record coming out of this market. Oh, we're going to watch that. Let's keep our eye on that. 6 months later, you know, label's picking it up and, you know, putting a gloss on it and sending it up to the pop charts, you know?
Right. It's a business now, man. It's like, you know, I think it's a faster, I think a lot of guys now, I say, man, you definitely have to have your background as a musician, but on the same token, everybody stressed it again. You hear it over and over, but seriously, nowadays, if you're not on the business end of the grind, you're going to be left behind. Because everything is going over to the internet. Everything's crossing over to the internet now, man. I mean, sales are down, internet sales are up, but it's just, man, now you have the tools and the opportunity to really push yourself out as an independent artist and be successful at it if you utilize your tools and really get that business sense behind you.
Oh, man, your little business sense behind you just a little bit. And most importantly, if you just have a strong team and a few people are doing it, and they're going to be some emerging companies coming up right now. I actually have an emerging company. It's Monarch Emerging Media. And my company, we're basically taking a 2.0 approach to the industry where we're a small boutique label, and we're basically taking on a few projects a year, not a whole lot. And, you know, we're going to create a platform called the Micro Album, which is basically going to, you know, reinvent the wheel, so to speak. Because a lot of the labels are doing these albums with 10 songs, 15 songs. We're going to compress it down to 4 songs, give you 4 great songs. We're going to film videos to the songs, and then we're going to package it at a reasonable cost to the consumer and, you know, give people an experience. We're going to merge the visual with the music. And not overdo it, not overcharge, and not just bombard you with all of these tunes when most of them are just, you know, not good anyway. They're just filler. They're putting a lot of filler on these albums.
Right.
And, you know, so there's going to be a few companies, and I'm really working hard to make sure that, you know, my company, Monarch, is going to be one of the companies that are leading the 2.0 revolution and, you know, just making it make sense again. Musically for people and giving them an experience.
Definitely.
The reason why we all got into this in the first place.
Right. And as a man, I also want to talk about your music background. And because of your experience as a musician, as a director of A&R, you've also served a couple of projects, man, as a music director for a couple of bands, man. How was that, touring with the live band? And, you know, also tell me this. Do you prefer that live studio feel, or do you like that live stage feel and you know, being on stage, vibing off the different band members?
I love both, man. I love being on stage live with a band, and you know, my band that I'm working with right now, we're going through that process of gelling musically and gelling as a team and having that, you know, synchronization and that almost like a one heartbeat kind of a vibe.
Yes.
And that's great. And then when I worked with the Cheetah Girls on their tour as the music director, it was really interesting because a lot of stuff we did, we went into the studio and recorded all of the music, and they took it out on the road because they didn't have a live band on the road. So we created the live element, even though they were just performing to our tracks on their replay machine. But, you know, the audience and the kids felt as though it was a live band because we were able to go into the studio with all of the musicians and use a lot of those tools in the studio. So I enjoyed that experience. It was my first time doing that, and we did so well the first time, they asked us to come back and do the Christmas tour, too.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah, so I got a chance to do that twice, and it was a chance to work with Disney, and even though it was a small capacity, it opened up the doors, you know, for more things, and for now that I have an end with Disney, I can always use that on my resume and say, hey, you know, well, yeah, I was wanting to create a live experience for you guys on 2 Cheetah Girls tours. You guys must have made a mint on those tours.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And they're coming here to see them perform and, you know, for the music to be entertaining and be entertained for an hour and 20 minutes.
You know, I try to stress to everybody, man, you know, if possible, try to get some live playing experience as a producer and as a keyboard player. You know, I just feel it just gives you a different feel, a different way of looking at music when you play live versus being in the studio. Because sometimes when you're stuck in the studio, you can tend to think inside the box and you get yourself so structured where you really can't get out your zone. But when you get on that live audience feel, man, you're vibing with different band members, everybody's sending different licks and progressions your way. I just really think it builds you as a musician. You just have a better foundation. Your ear just develops a lot stronger. You know, give me some of that background that you've done there, man.
What'd you say? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last part.
I'm sorry, say it again.
That last part, I didn't catch what you said.
I was like, you know, give me the background and experience and some of the benefits that you gained from having that live feel versus being in a studio environment.
Oh, man. It just really helped me to understand that, you know, the groove is everything. And if you can stay locked into that pocket and into that groove, you know, you can keep people dancing. And, you know, sometimes in the studio, you tend to overthink things. But, you know, I'm wanting to compress things down to a 1-bar, 2-bar loop because I know that listening to the music, you know, that people are jamming to, and when you got them, there's certain pockets live. You can see it, like you playing live, and then you get into a pocket, you get into a groove.
Right, definitely.
you get into a pocket in a groove, and you'll see people start to react. And you say, oh, okay, this one little piece of music is what people are reacting to.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, that's awesome.
It is. It's such a key essential to have as a player and as a producer. Definitely if you're a keyboard player, man, you should be playing live somewhere, getting that, you know, audience feeling, getting those jitters out of performing in front of an audience, you know.
It teaches you and helps you learn to simplify things.
Definitely.
That's basically it, you know.
Right.
By, you know, like if you look at a lot of the old James Brown stuff, you know, James Brown was one of those people who would lock into a groove and he wouldn't get out of the groove.
Right.
You know, he sometimes played one 2-bar loop for 15 minutes on stage.
Right.
And had people going crazy.
You know, I think that's why his music was sampled so much, man, just because he kept that groove going for so long throughout the album. A lot of guys who chopped up samples were really gravitating to James Brown's library, I think.
Absolutely. And that comes from playing live, because you start to learn, you know, if you're playing live but you change it up too much, you lose, people stop moving. You're like, oh, go back to that thing.
Definitely.
that's usually within a bar or two. That's like 2 bars.
Oh, right. Exactly. Exactly. So, Roy, what is on the agenda for your new endeavors, man? What's on the plate, man? What we got coming up?
Well, besides Monarch Emerging Micromedia, which is basically a micro major label, which I just launched, I'm going to be putting out my first record, which is The Invisible Man. And basically, the Invisible Man concept came from me for so long being behind the scenes and being an invisible entity in the music business. It's actually turned into a movement.
Wow.
Of its own.
Amazing.
So I'm really looking forward to that. We're already at about 1,000 spins on it. 30 stations have picked it up, and we're moving forward on the record. And, you know, for me, you know, Invisible Man is an alter ego. You know, he represents all the invisible, an invisible nation of people, man, that just need somebody to speak on their behalf. We haven't been given credit for what they've done. They haven't been compensated for what they've done. Just that whole subculture, man.
Amen to that, man. Man, for anybody that wants to contact you, where should they hit you up at?
Okay, right now, I have a website. It's royhamiltoniii.com, royhamilton3.com. And that's pretty much the main place at the moment where I can be reached. And from there, you can reach my MySpace, my Facebook, my Twitter, YouTube channel, all that good stuff.
Nice. Well, we got to definitely hook up, man.
We're gonna hook up. You kidding me? You know, I'm really working hard and striving to, you know, be part of those new legends, one of those new legends of the business that helped to reinvent and save the music and take it back to a great place where it's about love and about fun and about excitement and about, you know, giving a good show, about the performance, the mystique, the mystery. All the things and all of the reasons why we are who we are today, Spud, and why we're here. You know, I want to help to rekindle some of that magic, because I think a lot of it's been lost with a lot of the, you know, music that's just negative and not really giving a good message about women, or not giving a good message about pop culture. And there is still a lot of good in pop culture. It just needs to be brought out, and certain messages need to rise to the top again. And, you know, I hope that Monarch is definitely part of that movement moving forward.
It will be, man. It's a great mission, man. I'm definitely intrigued by it and inspired by it just from hearing a little bit of what I've heard today, man. And it's gonna pop, man. I already know it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad you're a supporter.
Definitely.
I'm here for you, man. Anything you need, let me know. Happy to help, support, and, you know, do
definitely
what I can.
Definitely. Well, Roy, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, brother, man. I appreciate you coming again. It was truly an honor, man, chopping it up with you. And please don't be a stranger, man. You got a spot here at the Producers Corner anytime, brother.
Thank you so much, man.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All right. God bless, man. Later.
Thank you. And shout out to Roy Hamilton for coming on the show and sharing his musical expertise and experience with us, man. It's always an honor, man, to talk to somebody as passionate and as driven to succeed as a musician as Roy, man. I mean, he's doing a tremendous job, man. He's got major credits, and he's worked with the best in the business, man. And, you know, you can't go wrong there, man, having that guidance from the elders. So, shout out again to Roy Hamilton. You know, he did get a chance to bless us with the track, man, The Invisible Man. And to close out the show, man, I definitely want to play it, man. It's a good song. Great concept, great vision that he's really trying to push out there, man. Like you said, create a movement of the people that aren't really getting recognized. You're actively in the industry, but just really getting that recognition and really getting the pay that you deserve. So, man, it's just a great mission statement, and I definitely think that you guys will enjoy the track as well. So I'm going to let the track extend out and play. And for those of you that like to contact me, hit me up on my email, spud2tight@gmail.com. And also hit my website up for all the interviews and past interviews I have, spud2tightmusic.ning.com. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Wanted to be invisible, it's overrated. I was the invisible, still infamous, but never visual. So I couldn't do a whole lot for my people. But now I gotta step up to the plate. Even though most haters told me I can't. Said I sound like Kanye, you sound like Drake. But I'm royalty, and I carry my weight. Most of your favorite stars, they know me. Some of them even dub ideas from me. I didn't know what a superstar I was until the voice inside told me I was
the invisible man. It's finally taking off the invisible suit so you can see who I am. Now baby, I can shine like a star for you. The invisible man. It's finally taking off the invisible suit so you can see who I am. Now baby, I can shine like a star for you.
You gotta shine. Never let me tell you you can't shine. No, no. Never let me tell you you can't shine.
For this Maybach, and I did it without the help of a mage, and I take that. I ain't a gangster,
yeah, that's a fact.
But I'm connected, now that's the end of that. I might be the end of rap. I might send most rappers back to traps. Why? Cause I got the best content. I'm next like priests, learn my rhymes in my convent. I might catch a bird tonight. From London to Paris, I'm certified. Just call up the Grove in Watford. 2 weeks stays with my blokes in Hartford Shore. I'm a legend, that's for sure. First mixtape, now I'm a mixtape connoisseur. Now this may leave you kinda sore. Hit the bricks, I'm invisible no more.
The invisible man is finally taking off the invisible suit so you can see who I am. Now baby, I can shine like a star for you. The invisible man is finally taking off the invisible suit so you can see who I am. Now baby, I can shine like a star for you.
You gotta shine.
Shine.